So I substituted for Tiwary last Monday. It's one thing giving a talk on Sunday and then you go to Monday and it's like, uh-oh, I'm at the grown-ups table. And I really had a good time preparing it. And so some of you may have heard it, and I didn't want to just repeat myself. So this morning I'm going to give you a summary of some of what I said on Monday, and then have us all have an opportunity to share in breakout group and large group our own efforts with being fully with the truth of mind and Dhamma. Last Sunday, Lyndall shared from Ajahn Suchito's book, which we've been sharing all year long. From his description of this parami of truthfulness, he said it's both an aspect of morality, of sila, but it also refers to perception, to the ability to see things in an undistorted way. He says this is the truthfulness of mind and of the entire Dhamma. He calls this parami the fullness of truth. And as I considered his words, I realized that this parami is really invites us to take a very deep dive into honesty with self and with the mind. And as we do it, just a quick reminder, this is not an opportunity to berate ourselves. This is a time for we're looking at the truth of what goes on in our mind and in our lives. The fullness of truth, the truthfulness of mind and of the entire Dhamma. It's a process of seeing delusion, fantasy, all the BS that comes up in our minds, and calling it out. It's knowing the difference between preferences and truth. Knowing the differences between an emotion that has arisen in the moment and the truth of the way things are. It's knowing the difference between our interpretation of what someone has said and the truth of what that person really wanted to communicate. And it's honoring the way life unfolds naturally as opposed to how we might prefer life to unfold. And it's the truth of knowing that this thought, this state of mind, is not permanent and we don't have to take birth in it. Take identity in it. We see how everything changes and morphs. This truthfulness practice is discernment writ large. It's inviting us to take all of those insights we've discovered on the path. And to quote Christina Feldman, we dust them off from the shelf that we have housed them and we bring them back fully into our daily practice. So on last Monday, I explored in quite a bit of detail this sutta. It's called the Vipalasa Sutta. It is from the Numerical Discourses. I think it's just brilliant that thousands and thousands of pages of suttas are organized in the ones, twos, threes, fours, etc. And it's called the Vipalasa Sutta. And apologies if I mispronounced it. But so this is how this sutta starts. The Buddha says, "These four, O monks," and it's also talking to us, "are distortions of perception, distortions of thought, and distortions of view. There are four of them: sensing no change in the changing, sensing pleasure and suffering, assuming self where there's no self, and sensing the unlovely as lovely." Some teachers call these distortions hallucinations. Others call them errors of judgment, errors of view. This morning, we're going to be talking about them more as obstacles. But whatever we call them, they can really help us to veer as we see how we veer away from the truth and hang on to delusion and fantasy. So I'm going to say a few words about each of them. And then I'll talk a little bit about some of the obstacles that have come up in my own life. And then we'll have an opportunity in breakout groups and large group to talk about this more. So the first distortion or hallucination is taking what is impermanent to be permanent. I don't think a day goes by where I don't realize that while I accept the truth of Anicca, I still behave as if there are exceptions to this truth. And one of the ways that it shows up is in our language. When people are shocked by death, by losses, by illnesses, I think that using that description of shock is a manifestation of our unwillingness to accept the truth of impermanence. Things change. Business environments change. Health changes. Relationships change. And we still kind of hold on to our exception list. I realize that, you know, yes, I've totally accepted the truth of Anicca. And then I think, oh, right, except there won't be any separation from my son. I thought that about my spouse and then he died. Or I'll live in this house until I die. There are all kinds of ways that we kind of deny impermanence. The second hallucination or distortion is to take what is unsatisfactory to be happiness. You know, I think we're really fortunate to be born into this human realm. And all these sense doors, the sense door of aroma, you know, where bread baking and how it fills your entire kitchen. Daphne in the winter, sweet peas in the summer, taking that bite of the first ripe tomato in your garden, caressing the soft skin of a newborn, being awestruck by the beauty of a morning sunrise or art, poetry, music. These truly are gifts of being alive. But what happens when those particular moments end, or when we find ourselves clinging to them and looking for another moment that's going to be just as good or maybe even better? We go after hit of pleasure after hit of pleasure and delude ourselves into thinking and believing that maybe the next pleasure hit will be the best one. There's no end to this seeking. In much of our world, and certainly we live in this very wealthy, privileged culture that reinforces this belief that we should be getting everything we want. Remember that bumper sticker that says, you know, he with the most toys wins? You know, we believe that that's the path to happiness. But we know from our practice in studying the Buddha's words, and we know from our own experience, the Buddha saw that this unceasing wanting, all this seeking, is the very thing that causes our suffering. Unhappiness, pain happens, but that second arrow, that's all of us seeking and finding and then discovering that it doesn't last and it doesn't really bring us that kind of happiness we had thought. The third hallucination or distortion is taking what is non-self to be self. We take what is impersonal for being all about me and mine. We see how we take an emotion or mind state and turn it into I am this, you are that. And when one of those identifications becomes so habitual and familiar, we really believe this is who I am. We identify with all these sensations of body, thought, and emotions as who we are. From the simple and mundane to the more serious and all-inclusive, we come up with these identities. This is who I am, and this is the way I'll always be. This is who you are, and who you will always be. So I mentioned that I was on retreat recently with Tim and Tiwary. Tim shared this beautiful story about himself when he was a very shy young man. And he still kind of has that tendency towards shyness. He remembers, he told about being on his first meditation retreat where it took all of his courage to raise his hand and ask a question. And now, Tim is one of our guiding teachers. You know, everything changes, including us. The fourth hallucination is taking what is unattractive to be attractive. We participate in this billion-dollar fashion and cosmetic industry. And even those of us who, you know, do our thrift store shopping and all of that, we really believe that somehow we can make ourselves look better than we actually are. Joseph Goldstein describes this industry as its mission is to get us to perceive our human bodies as being more beautiful and perfect than they really are. And of course, doing whatever we do to stay healthy and look attractive, there's nothing wrong with that. As long as we know what we're doing, that we're not dismissing or denying, you know, beauty, but we understand that when we're caught up in this attachment to this beautiful form, and when we actually look at the ever-changing nature and inevitable decay of all life, we can see more clearly. So all these distortions, these all these distortions of view, we somehow believe that if only things would be great, if only I had the right job, the right sweetie, the right house, the right body, the right mind, the right meditation, if only this moment were like this. Bonnie Duran is a lovely Dharma teacher in our community. And some years ago, she gave a talk on distortions, and she put it this way. Our culture puts forth the proposition that the perfect what is out there and waiting for us, and that our job is finding that perfect what. I believe that we really all want to live in relationship with the kind of truth that Ajahn Suchito was describing, the fullness of truth. But there are obstacles that we face from our conditioning, our experiences, our opinions and views. And so I want us to take just a couple minutes. I'm going to share a few of my own obstacles, and then we're going to be able to go into small groups to share some of your own. And I know it's often hard to come to this, to the breakout groups. I think all of us have learned so much from each other, and this would be such a lovely opportunity to hear people's own experience with this. So if it's possible, I really invite you to fully participate. So here's some of my obstacles. My fantasies and delusions are way more pleasant to experience than the reality of things as they are. And yesterday at Clear Mountain, we were reminded of something that the Buddha used, the phrase that he used to describe anger, which is one of the manifestations of the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. And he described it this way as having a honey tip and a poisoned root. And I think all of these poisons are like that. They're really seductive. So one of my obstacles is noticing the strong seductive pull of these delusions and fantasies. A second is I recently discovered that what I have considered one of my strengths in life, which is organizing and planning, is actually sometimes an obstacle for me to be with the truth of things. It's another way that I've been understanding selfing. I'm in a pretty challenging phase of my life around figuring out how to keep my business going, but that I can retire and where I'm going to live and, you know, all the things that those of us are confronted with as we get to be older in life. And I don't really like uncertainty, and I want clarity. And so instead of being with the truth that things are uncertain and unclear right now, and actually some of them are out of my hands, I've been trying to take that skill of organizing and planning and trying to control and come up with a specific outcome. You know, life unfolds as it unfolds, but this big self comes in and tries to take control. The last obstacle I want to share is I have always had a very optimistic, rosy outlook on life. I understand where it came from. I grew up in a household with a parent who was depressed and unhappy, and that's what kind of filled the space. And so as a young person, I chose something different. And I'm delighted that I have it, but I realize that sometimes this rosy outlook really covers up my being with the truth of the way things are in the moment, that subtle denial of dukkha. So I want to break us into these groups and invite you, knowing that, you know, this Sangha, we've developed such trust with each other. There's a willingness to be vulnerable and honest with each other. So I'd like you to share what's your understanding of what might be keeping you from this fullness of truth. So let's go to breakout groups. And you're going to create four of them. And know that where you're invited to be as real as you can be to your comfort level. And for Anne, who has to, she has to leave soon. So bye and thank you for joining us. It's not a place to give advice. If someone asks, of course, respond. And we listen with full-heartedness. So enjoy your groups, and I'll give you a warning when you need to move on. Give everybody their time. Any questions about what the prompt is? Everybody good? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Everybody's back. Yay. So we've got a good amount of time for people to share. Either raise your virtual hand or just unmute and go like this. And I can see everybody on my screen, so happy to just call on whoever and have you share some of your wisdom. No obstacles. Yes, Judith.
No obstacles, Susan. We all have all together. You'll be happy to know. Actually, it was quite a good discussion. A lot of very profound, deep issues coming forth, and what I immediately thought about was listening to your talk was that one of the most valuable things that I have learned from this path and from other spiritual paths as well, but is that I do not have to believe my mind, that it's gonna be crazy. I can't control it. It's just gonna, do its thing, but I don't have to be sucked into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we all bow to that one. It's such an interesting thing because our mind is also the discerning organ, the one that helps us find clarity and walking that balance between, is it just nutso, wacko, Oh, there's something happening here that I should be paying attention to. And it's pretty exciting and sometimes difficult. Thank you, Judith. That's, boy, right on that one. Anyone else willing to share? I'd sure love to hear what some of your obstacles are. Think we all. Yes, Claire, please.
I feel like this one is a really, this is a really big, scary one. And I feel so grateful to have Sangha. Like, what if I was all alone in the world and I was contemplating this stuff? Ugh. For me, my obstacles, I realize it's just about that very narrow path that this path is, and that it's for me that there's like I can fall off this side into despair, or I can fall off this side into self-doubt, and just to stay right there on that path is just really tricky. And I appreciate your guidance so much.
Yeah, despair and self-doubt. Clear Mountain yesterday that Ajahn Covilo gave this great talk, and in the questions they were asking about the hindrances, and he shared the similes, the images of the bowls of water, and that the Buddha used to describe them, and self-doubt. And Lauren, I know you were there, and maybe you can help me remember. It was muddy water that then got stuck into a closet, that the whole bowl got moved away. I mean, doubt is such a powerful hindrance that it muddies everything, and then it also like goes and hides, only to sneak up on you tomorrow or whatever. And I just those similes that the Buddha uses so often, those images of I found really to be helpful. And yay for supportive Sangha. Gene isn't here today to give us his little heart Sangha, but we all feel it. Yeah. Thanks, Claire. Glad you're here. Jerry, please.
Yeah, for me, my challenge is like the flip of doubt, is that strong views and opinions. I go into things, oh, I know this, I know that person, I know how this is going to play out. And yeah, I just find, it's almost like that sense of confidence is almost like, a road sign for me. Okay. Yeah. Do I really? Are you sure? It's a good time for me to ask a question. Really?
Boy, yay for that, for those questions, because I don't know about anybody else, but I identify around the strong opinions. And just the other day, someone I really care about was sharing with me some very, very difficult stuff. And I realized in processing it later that I went to all kinds of interpretations and assumptions about what he was really meaning. And that opinion about him and his partner, and yeah. So that question, thank you, Jerry. Really? Is this true? Is this really true? Yeah. Thank you. How about for and Nana, please go ahead.
Thank you. And thanks for all the reflections that have been shared so far. And what I'll add is, in my personal experience, truth as it is, not as I imagine it to be, began to show up when I was steeped in the dukkha of being untruthful. Let me give a specific example. a lot of my relationships changed or ended because the truth is I was people pleasing and filling in the gap. Therefore, not filling my needs and not coming from a place of being a sovereign being. And this is related to the traumas. We all do have them. I suffered as a boy. So when I got to the point where these relationships were unsatisfactory, they were satisfactory so long as I was filling them with my good energy, if you want to put it that way, or my energy, let me put it that way. And the moment I stopped doing that, there was no relationship. Or there was a desire to have the relationship based on my previous delusional state. Mm-hmm. And so coming to that recognition, seeing as it is, enabled truth in other areas of my life as well. And it's something that continues to happen. And the more truthful I am to myself, where eventually there's less of a difference between my private face or my public face. I'm not there yet, but that's the goal. That what resonates with truth emerges. But until then, there's a suffering of going through this recognition that there is no permanent self. And the example I gave in the group was, if I was born in Minsk or Belarus or in Kuala Lumpur, same gender, same ethnicity, would I be the same person? Absolutely not. Subjective T, small t truth. Yet there's objective T truth. And what the Dharma does, like in quantum physics. Anyway, so that's my reflection on it. Just what,
It's you're just pointing to, you know, they're subtle and mundane and they're big. And they're, it's such a beautiful invitation to explore the sometimes the small ways. I think probably a lot of people can identify with being people pleasers. You know, we all want to be liked. We all want to be validated and affirmed and included. And sometimes we do a dance of that's not very honest, self-honest to fulfill that. And one of the realities of the Dharma on this path is that sometimes when we really start exploring it, the results can be difficult. Sometimes we lose relationships. I have a number of dear people in my life who are former addicts, and they really talk about that. Once they got clean and sober, who their people were really changed. And you know, thus, love Sangha, you know, because we all get it. I mean, we might have a different personal, our content is different, but we get that challenge of being so real with ourselves and with others and learning how to do that and navigate that. I honor your process, Nana. It's, I think we can all identify with our own path around that of, yeah. Thank you for that sharing. We still have a couple minutes. I set it up so that we'd have plenty of time to share. And so if anyone, Peter, please.
Thanks, Suze. Yeah, and thank you for your teaching this morning.
You're welcome.
And there was, and you were talking about, you know, that being a planner and that, you know, here I'm in a situation, let's develop the plan and execute. And we were in our breakout group, we were talking about something adjacent to that and related to what Nanand was just saying too, about avoiding conflict, avoiding the truth, you know, in terms of truthfulness. Sometimes the truthfulness is that there's conflict. but we can, for our own reasons and our own histories, we can do a lot to avoid that. Just that like, and it's a kind of conflict is like uncertainty. You know, they're both these things that actually get in the way of just doing what you're going to do and or having it be a certain way. And there's an anxiety that one has to live with to hold the bigger space, mm-hmm. demanded by the conflict or uncertainty. And that is a form of, that is a piece of the truthfulness. I don't know. That's just came out of our breakout discussion.
Oh, thank you. Ooh. And then once you own that and really validate there's conflict now, then what do you do about it? And how do you speak one's truth, but listen to the other person's truth and own up to our own behavior and contribution to the conflict? Ooh. Challenging. Thank you for sharing that. Monica, please.
Thank you. There's some important truths that I have kind of with a lot of work on my part come to realize in my life. And I think that the reason I haven't realized them earlier is because in order to face them, it took a lot of suffering. So I think that for me, there's been, you know, like a definite connection between kind of repressing some things that I have needed to face and kind of like the suffering or actually really sadness that I have had to go through in order to see them. But now that I'm kind of done with that process, or at least, yeah, I do feel done with that process and they feel like real truths, I am glad that I had to go through the suffering, because, you know, suffering is temporary and impermanent. It was very unpleasant. I wanted to not have it, but it wasn't like a suffering for life. It was, you know, just a feeling that went through for a few minutes, and I've been trying to avoid it and not face it. And so it really, like, sometimes facing some truth that, you know, you may or may not like have accountability for, maybe you don't, but they still are associated with, like, it takes a lot of courage to face them. Mm-hmm. And that's been kind of like my biggest hindrance. The, like, even subconsciously, like, not wanting to experience the feelings in my body of what it would take to see those truths. And so I'm actually quite, grateful to the meditation process where you really, kind of like sit with your, with the inside of your mind and take whatever comes. Because that's been valuable in this. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. And I'm sorry I'm cutting you off, but we're right at the end. And wow, beautiful sharing. And it's weird for me to say this, have a good time with this. In that, yeah, you know, as Monica said, some of it's going to be really painful to look at. And then, but then we're going to be on the other side of that and look back and know it. Remember that SIMS is an all-volunteer organization, and supporting our guiding teachers and the organization financially is so appreciated. And I apologize for going over. Let's just really honor the sincerity and commitment and wisdom of our practice, and the tender-heartedness of our practice, and send that out to our immediate communities, the larger community, those who are in such pain and difficulty. May all beings find the end of suffering. Be well, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your day. See you again soon.